welcome. Welcome to episode 2 of the Temple of Mystery, where we bring up the mysteries about temples. Hi, I'm Sam. I'm Grape Flavored.
I'm Clarence.
I'm Steven.
And today we have a special guest with us.
Special means retarded.
I'm Jerry.
Special does mean retarded.
I'm not retarded.
And Jerry's joining us again. Jerry, if you're getting closer, a little bit closer.
Okay, and you're now closer now.
You mind. And Jay's hanging out too. Say hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
All right. Well, lots to talk about this week. Our first episode still hasn't been posted, so like, we can't really respond to anything. But this is the time I'd usually like to, if anyone has left any comments or any questions about the previous episode, this is the time that I would like to address those things.
So by episode 12, we'll at least once say something here about...
No. I plan on being consistent with that.
I'm sure we'll get hate mail within the next week or so. We're good.
And then after we do that, if we do have any mail... This is when we would address the mail, but yeah, we don't have that yet either. But we do have an email set up. It's thetempleofmystery@gmail.com.
MTG templeofmystery@gmail.com.
MTG templeofmystery. Why would you make it so complicated?
Because Temple of Mystery was already taken.
What about the Temple of Mystery?
Well, I didn't check that.
Well, that's the name of the podcast.
But it's an MTG podcast.
All right.
Temple of Mystery.
MTG templeofmystery@gmail.com. Send your pictures and whatnot to us and... So we can look at them.
We also have a Twitter.
Oh, we have a Twitter as well. Follow us all at Twitter.
I follow us.
Follow us all.
That one's simple. Mystery.
Yeah, just go to the show notes. You can see all that information and give us a follow and find us on Facebook. So you can like all of our posts and tell us how much.
Facebook? Do we have a Facebook?
No, don't do.
We'll
Facebook.
Have a Facebook.
I don't know.
I just figured
we're addressing other social medias. Let's go ahead and jump on.
Find us on Vine.
What about Google Plus and Kick?
Yeah, come hang out with us on Google Plus.
On Instagram.
We'll jump on there.
Yeah. Did you say a game developer?
Remember Zanga Man? It was like the very first like.
No.
I guess I know.
Yeah,
no.
It was a blog site. It was terrible, but it existed.
MySpace is all over the internet now, right?
Whoa, MySpace is still around?
It is. They revamped it.
Hey,
last year.
Let's all get on MySpace. Is that the hipster thing to do now? Is to be on MySpace now that all these other social medias have flourished and MySpace has been left?
I don't know, out? Jerry.
Is that
we
the hipster thing?
About magic.
We're talking about a hipster thing to do.
Wow. This is officially the most we've derailed away from magic. Officially.
Woo! Yeah, it's episode 2.
All right.
And Jerry's not with us.
It was a solid podcast plus 2 minutes, all right?
If you guys want to reach Jerry Hall, go somewhere else to do so.
Sorry?
See you guys later.
Okay.
All right. Today's date is October 27th,
2013. Definitely the 28th.
That's right. I messed that up this morning at work as well. It's the 28th. That's why I paused there because I thought I was getting it wrong. I guess you didn't turn the phone down.
The guy that told everybody to join.
That's the one. So right, definitely so October 28th, and we just had a couple events this last weekend.
Yeah. Let's talk about those.
The Invitational was the biggest one. It is the highest EV Magic tournament that is hosted year-round, more so than any Pro Tour or even Worlds or Vintage or whatever. It doesn't matter. This is the highest-paid tournament that happens all years, therefore, can be considered one of the biggest tournaments of the year. Happened this last weekend. And we'll talk about that here in a minute, but first I want to go ahead and address the Grand Prix that happened this last weekend across the seas. And I know I wrote down a word, and I know I said a word, but where did this Grand Prix take place, Stephen?
Antwerp.
So I did say it right? I thought I was saying it wrong.
Antwerp.
This is a real place, people.
Honestly, I have no idea where Antwerp is.
I don't either.
It's not in America.
I thought it was a joke.
Let's just leave it there. It might even be in like somewhere in Canada, for all I know.
Is that really a place?
No, that...
I really thought maybe that was just like the Twitter thing that put... Like,
it might be short for something, but it was called Grand Prix Antwerp, so let's just go with that.
Somebody Google Antwerp.
This isn't a geometry podcast, so let's...
That'd be geography.
That's geography.
We're not talking about that either, guys. I've never been good with numbers, all right?
It's in Belgium.
Oh.
Why didn't they have it in Brussels?
Is Belgium like in Brazil, or...
Oh, my God.
I'm just joking.
We can
I'm joking.
I don't think he is, guys.
Man, Sam's really bad at geometry.
here.
And life.
I'm not the one with the mustache.
It does make sense that he keeps calling this a round table.
I like the round table, okay? And we are kind of sitting circle-ish. You heard that we were brave, but now GP Antwerp, Steven, you want to take us away on this? Get us started.
GP Antwerp was
It was a modern.
Modern. And it was won by a Splinter Twin list by
Talk louder.
It was won by a Splinter Twin list by Patrick Dickman.
I wonder what tools he utilized to win this tournament.
Well, he had a pretty good package here with this.
No, lovely young fellow, I'm sure. Tell us what he played, Steve.
He was playing Splinter Twin. Looks like a pretty standard list. C-Rex Arcs. Kiki-Kiki.
Start at top, read it off. Real quick.
Two Deceiver X Arcs, two Grim Lavamancers, one Kiki-Kiki, four Pestermite, four Snappies, four Vendilion Click, two Cryptic Commands, one Dispel, two Izzet Charm, four Lightning Bolt, two Peak, three Remand, four Searing Visions, four Splinter Twin. In the board, he had two Ancient Grudge, two Battery Skull, one Dismember, one Dispel, one Engineered Explosives, one Grim Lavamancer, three Molten Rain, two Relic of Progenitus, and two Threads of Disloyalty.
I was just talking about Threads of Disloyalty the other day to Clarence. We couldn't remember what that card was called when we were talking about it. But remember, that was the card I said, the mana card.
Right, I said the name of it right up to you.
No, you couldn't think of it either at the time. You might have thought of
it. I said Domestication, then you said, no, not that one. I said Threads of Disloyalty.
Yeah.
What does that get you?
I'm sorry, what?
What does Threads of Disloyalty get you?
The creature with power 3 or less.
But what are you taking from it? What are you taking with it in modern?
First you got to look at, I think you're going to have more of a discussion on what you can't take with it that's played in modern. Most creatures, especially the ones that played on multiples, and most modern decks are going to qualify.
Because it's converted mana cost of 2 or less, not power of 2 or less. You get Tarmogoyf.
Oh, is it converted mana cost?
Is that where you're going for? Or is Tarmogoyf? I didn't know what you...
I was wrong. Okay, let's take a step back a bit. Okay, there are still plenty of great targets.
Who do you board that in against?
They're playing it in the board. You board it in against Fish. You board it against any sort of back. Any deck that's playing creatures. Any deck that's playing creatures. Any deck that's playing Bob. And that's any Jund list. And Jund has been very popular, especially in every format, for a while now. I was about to say especially one particular format, but that's not true. Jund is popular everywhere. And Tarmogoyf and Bob are two of the biggest and most played creatures in modern.
I really think it's four lists with Bob because the card draw makes this deck go off so much faster.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to be taking four off. The TG costs four, right?
Five.
Costs five.
Three red, two colors.
Yes. So, I mean,
I think you take
five from it.
And I think you poured it in against people that are playing Spellskite as their hate against you as well. Because that's what a lot of people board in against Splinter Twins.
Oh, that's not it. Yeah.
So you take...
That's probably exactly what it's for.
I don't have enough modern experience to say, but I...
Well, I haven't played modern since last modern season. But there you go. Modern season is right around the corner, and I was going to talk about modern decks here in a little bit that we were going to play. Tell us what else was in the top 8 of this tournament. What did Splinter Twin defeat this time to win?
There was Affinity. Nothing that looked
just
new there.
Standard Affinity.
Pretty standard Affinity.
Auto Brown.
You got Jund, big surprise. another Splinter Twin deck. Infect.
There's a deck actually titled Infect.
Yeah.
We need this list.
It's blue, green, maybe.
It has to be blue-green. That's the only viable one.
Is there some black in there?
Flakes you. Shit.
Yeah. Your 4S is fucking with us.
Four Blighted Agents, four Glistener Elves, four Noble Hierarchs, four Plague Stingers, and then to pump and get through, you got three Apostles Blessing, one Distortion Strike, four Groundswell, three Mind Bolt Croza, four Mutagenic Growth, one Predator Strike, four Rancor, and four Vines of Basswood.
Nice. So it's really an all-in deck.
That's kind of cool.
It's really an all-in deck. It makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one copy for you. It's still cool.
It's pretty great. Jeremiah plays Wild Defiance a lot, just to throw it out there.
Living in deck? Is that what's running for?
I don't know what Living in runs most of the time, honestly, but it makes sense. Gain 4 life to get it right back.
Only new card I see in there is two Anger of the Gods on the board.
That's cool. People have been bitching a lot about Living In. I guess it's a pain in the ass to play against.
And there's another Living In deck as well in the top 8.
How is Living In so good with Deathrite Shaman? I guess they do it all one turn.
They do it, right. It's really fast.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Deathrite Shaman that... Like, how do they do it with Relic of Progenitus in a lot of sites?
Nile Spellbomb? Does that not see play anymore? I always thought that was more playable than Relic if the Black Mana
is
available.
The thing about Living End is if they know you have the answer, they can play around it. They can load the graveyard with four or five creatures and then stop and let you deal with it and then do it all again because it doesn't
The creatures they throw in there just give them more creatures to be able to throw in there. And I see two Relic of Regenesis in Splinter Twin board.
Not a lot of graveyard hate?
One in the other Splinter Twin board. I think that...
A lot of people interact with their graveyards, I guess. Snapcaster Mages, Tarmogoyfs, Deathrite Shaman.
That's it. There are a total of three Relic... There are three graveyard hate cards in the top eight.
That's crazy.
And they are all three in sideboards.
And there's only one Living Endless in the top eight?
There's two.
There you go.
So if you rest in peace against Living End, do you just win?
I think so.
They can try to get there with their...
They play rare for... Like, what are the... look at the Living Endless. Is there anything that... Battle.
Let's see.
Rest in peace.
Beast Within. They run four Beast Within.
Yeah, they run four main deck Beast Within.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the direct decay.
One of them had it in the board. No, never mind. They don't.
No.
No direct decay.
Wow. So, get your rest in peace.
Yeah.
If you're battling.
Decay.
Play decks.
They would cascade into.
Right.
Play decks that don't interact with your graveyard and main deck. Rest in peace. And then you don't have to worry about Living End. That's my takeaway from this.
And there was one Tron list.
There was a Tron list. One Ulamog, three Wormcoils, Altdust, Ancient Stirrings, Chromatic Sphere, Chromatic Star, Expedition Map.
Tron's not exciting.
Fire Clasm, three main deck Relics there.
Three
main deck Relics.
In there. Relic of Progenitus.
That's awesome.
And four Chron Limiter.
So there's six total Relic of Progenitus in the top eight at GP.
And half of them were in one deck.
Very nice. So looking at the list of what, looking at the top eight list, what do you guys think? This is where Modern is right now, pre-Modern season. This is probably the tournament that people are going to go back and look at least one of them, when they're brewing for the upcoming PTQ season. From this tournament and from your previous experiences with Modern, what would you play if you're playing in a Modern tournament next week? And Steven Graves. If you could play any deck, not just card. Don't base your option on card selection. Any deck.
A while back, I was testing that red, white, and blue deck. It's kind of a red, white, and blue mid-range tempo flash. I guess it's more just tempo. Tempo flash with a...
Guys, St. Trapped?
No. Astron Scepter package, though.
Oh, that's right.
Because Astron Scepter with Lightning Helix, Boros Charm, that stuff.
Charms.
Pretty good. Charms.
Charms. Call it Lucky Charms.
Like Boros Charm is the only charm I was running there.
If someone tries to, like, thought sees you and make you discard a charm, you could shake your head and be like, they're always trying to get my Lucky Charms.
anyway, what would you play, Sam?
I still like red, white, and blue. I have a red, white, and blue list that I've been working on for a while, and it would need some updates from Left It, but I still like it for the format. It plays lots of counter spells.
Clarence over here still playing some Balakut?
Clarence would play Scapeshift.
Nope.
No?
Oh, wait. Nope.
Well, I'm playing Jund. You can't do Scapeshift anymore?
I don't know how to count, so I can't play Scapeshift.
As it turns out.
I would definitely play Jund. Just seems more like a more powerful deck. You have the answers to everything at your disposal playing those three colors, and you get to play with the coolest cards, in my opinion.
The Thoughtseize.
They're all cards that you know how to play. You've played with a lot.
Wow, three Thoughtseize and three Inquisitions main decks.
That's awesome. Most matchups.
You're losing a card turn one.
Yeah, most matchups you board out like half of those. After some matchups you board out all of those.
Just want to play with Liliana of the Veil some more.
Game one, those cards aren't bad. In most matchups, those cards aren't bad. Jerry Hall?
It really does give you access to all the good cards.
Jerry Hall? I don't know what your experience on Modern has been in the past.
Little to none.
Okay. If you were playing in a Modern tournament next weekend, what would you play?
Jund. Yeah. I was going to say Jund before Clarence said Jund, and now Clarence said Jund, and I'm going to still say Jund. So Jund, final answer.
What appeals to you in Jund?
Well, I hear it's really popular in all formats. So not just one particular format, but all formats.
It is
so
good in all formats.
Figured I'd just
go
with
that.
What
card in Jund do you want to play?
What card in? I don't know. Bloodbraid Elf. I love the old Bloodbraid Elf.
That's
okay,
bad.
Jerry Hall. Yeah. Let's get caught up in the Modern. Modern,
see,
real quick.
That's why I don't play Modern. because I don't know anything about it.
They banned Bloodbraid Elf to try to nerf the Jund deck, actually.
Yeah, because it's
awesome.
It
didn't work.
And then they banned Deathrite Shaman.
That's just the card that I remember playing when it was in Standard, and I loved it then.
What about Blightnings? Would you jam some Blightnings in your deck?
No, I took the Blightnings out when it was in Standard, so...
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah, no,
I was going to say, don't play Blightning in Modern, but in Standard, they were good.
Yeah, but I did really well with that. Probably could have done weller.
It turns out Jund was a good deck a few years ago in Standard.
Weller. Yeah. I said Weller.
Weller, all right then.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that this Jund list that made the top 8 at Antwerp had two copies of Olivia Valdarin on the board.
In the board?
And
what do you bring that in against?
That's pretty awesome.
Splinter Twin?
It does kill Pestermite.
I bet it rocks the mirror match, though. I bet that might push you over the top on the mirror match. Take out the opposing mana dorks
and Dark Confidant, Deathrite Shaman, Kitchen Finks.
Oh, yeah, you get the card advantage where you kill their Confidant.
Absolutely. Okay, I see that. Just the one upper, I see. Anything else you guys want to say about this GP in particular? Any notable names in the top 8?
Congrats again, Patrick Dickman.
Dickman takes down the GP.
Let's see, who was in the top 8?
It sounds like a video I watched last week.
They'll be gunning for you.
Top 8.
A bunch of French guys?
Yep.
I'm guessing that some of them are Belgian.
We're very cultural magic players.
There's a dude named Fabrizio.
Cool.
On the top Fabrizio. And another guy named Nazar.
I bet they look just like last.
Two of the top 8 has Z's in their first name.
that has to be a
love the foreign GPs,
right?
No, probably not.
If it happened in America, maybe.
Fair enough.
Okay. The other tournament we wanted to talk about from this last weekend, it was the Star City Games Invitational. The exclusive Invitational, in order to get there, is strictly by invite. You have to either win Star City Games Open Tournament, earn enough points playing the circuit to get the invite, or win ICQ or Super ICQ to win an invite. This tournament pays out over $75,000 in just prizes. That's a good $25,000 more than a pro tour. That's a significant amount. So due to the eliteness of the invites, I suppose, I'm not sure how many players. Jerry Hall, I believe you have the information for us on the Invitational. I don't think you know.
I know who won the top four in both tournaments.
Nice. Okay. The Invitational, since it's fed off the Star City Games Open Circuit, it is done, which is done day one is Standard, day two is Legacy. They mash up for the Invitational, Standard and Legacy, and I believe they go 4-4. They go 4 rounds Standard, 4 rounds Legacy. Someone back me up here. It's either 4 or 5. I can't remember.
I
know Michael Hetrick was referring to them as dailies. So, like, how many rounds are a daily? It's 4
dailies
rounds,
are
right?
4, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so 4 rounds.
Yeah. It says there's 39 decks at the tournament, so...
And so they take the... whoever does the best in both formats combined make the top 8, and they alternate, and this top 8 was played out in Legacy decks this time around. Jerry has found for us the top decks from both... For the top players... both Standard and Legacy for us.
Yes.
For starters, Brad Nelson won his first Star City Games Invitational. He's actually been on a tear recently since his initial run on the Pro Tour where he made Player of the Year. He kind of disappeared there for a while, joins the team, moved to Roanoke, started working with Star City Games, played more Magic, and started losing more.
So what happens when you play more, you lose more.
But here we are. We're back to a format. I guess that's favorable for him. What did Brad Nelson take down the tournament with? What was his Legacy winning deck?
His Legacy winning deck was Sneak and Show.
I know he was more interested in playing Standard because the week before he did get second place in the GP, and Standard playing the Mono Black Devotion list with Team Star City Games. We talked about that a lot on our first episode, and he was playing almost the same list. And also in the top 8 was Brian Dunn doing it, BBD as we ended up calling him. Because we couldn't do that name.
It didn't have a Z in it.
So BBD was also in the top 8. Brad actually got to face him in the quarterfinals, which was pretty great. But this time it was Legacy. Why are you guys keep shaking your heads like that? What are you looking at? You looking for the...
I was trying to find out how many players there.
Oh, okay. No dice there?
No
all right.
Dice there.
Tell us about... I don't really want to get into Legacy. None of us are Legacy experts by any means whatsoever, but tell us what Brett Nelson threw as far as Legacy cards.
I played Sneak and Show. There's 3 Sneak and Show decks in the top 4 of the Legacy tournament, and they all pretty much run the same list. It's four Emrakul, four Gristlebrand, and you
they use other cards to play with
them. And sneak attack them into play. But he's got like Lotus Petals in here, Brainstorms, Force of Wills, Intuition, Spell Pierce, Cataxian Probes, Ponders, just ways to put more, find the things he needs to play the cards that win.
So basically put out, the deck plays, you put out Grizzlebrand and Emrakul, you win.
Yep.
Okay, very good. Love Legacy.
And there's three different versions of that, and they all are pretty much the same.
So they're not different versions, there's just three copies of that.
They're kind of different, there's little differences, okay. Tiny little differences.
So Snakin chose a good Legacy deck.
Yeah. The other Legacy deck that was there that made the top four was Shardless Bug, which, here we go. It's like a bug, little aggro deck.
Bug
cascades
witches
into dudes to kill people with.
Clarence, you know how the deck works, Shardless Bug? I didn't know.
I bet it uses Shardless Agent.
It uses Shardless Agent. But it uses it into the Strix.
Yeah, the Baleful Strix, the Deathrite Shaman, Farmer Boy, and, you know, just,
And I think they have a way to just repeatedly do that.
The Mind Sculptor's in there, Liliana's in there.
We'll talk about that when we have Eddie on.
Yeah, we'll have Eddie on sometime.
He plays Sharp.
He knows the Legacy cards.
You can go into Ancestral Vision.
Yeah, you can go to that, you can go into the Hint of Shrock,
Deathrite Shaman,
Pulsing Thoughts. Bunch of stuff. Basically hits everything. And
wow, I didn't know I played him the Turok. That's such a great card.
Two of this list does.
Legacy.
Woo! Okay.
That's my list plays in Turok.
Tell us about the top standard decks that came out of the Invitational. This is what I'm really interested in. I have not looked at this information.
It's Brad Nelson's Naya control list. And it...
So I lied. Brad Nelson was not playing
He was not playing Mono Devotion at this turn. This list runs Fluxion Smiter and Stormbreath Dragon as its threats to win. It also runs Elspeth and Xenagos, which also are cards that win. And then runs Symbol of Elysion and Advent of the Worm. And then for the controller package, it's got the Sleznia Charms, Anger of the Gods, and Mizzium Mortars, and Chained of the Rock. So just a bunch of way to clear the board to let their creatures kill them.
Also two of Sleznia Kirin as a way to win after Matt.
That is a neat deck.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun.
I've never heard of anything like that before.
26 land.
Looks like everything you've been trying to do but haven't been capable of.
I like that with Xenagos and Elspeth, you're just like, yeah, I'm going to throw out four tokens a turn.
Yeah, you just pretty much flood the board and it's pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Especially if you can manage to get an Elspeth ulti off, because that would be just...
I want a tribute of Brad Nelson for this deck. I mean, I want to obviously great job like piloting this deck to success, but did he build this deck? I'm gonna have to go read some stars.
Brad Nelson, did you build this deck?
Please tell us in the comments.
Go to the sideboard.
Sideboard's got a one of Pithy Needle, four Mistcutter Hydra, two Assemble the Legion, two Last Breath, two Wear, two Rorik Thar the Unbowed, and two Sunhome Guild Mages.
It's two Wear Tear.
I guess.
Two Sunhome Guild Mage?
Yes, you can pay three to give creatures you control +1/+0 until end of turn, or pay four to put a 1/1 red-white soldier token, and it has haste, so it makes your dudes bigger and puts more bodies on the floor. Just to go along with all the other token production that you've already got.
So then to go with all that mana you're getting from Xenagos and all your freaking tokens, I guess?
Did you just say freaking?
I did.
Freaking. So yeah, and you got Wear and Tear in there. It destroys your detention spheres and other, like, pithy needles and annoying things.
So I wonder why Luxed and Spider are not Voice of Resurgence.
He's getting hit to that one.
The reason I say this is because
Clarence was trying to make an argument to the contrary.
That
was
absolutely not the argument we were having. We're having the argument of Luxodon Smiter versus Policeman Lion in an aggro deck.
Whatever.
And this is a control deck, and Luxodon Smiter gets on the field, gets through all the counters, and as long as you
move
the
three, would make it into a control deck.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard tale of a 3/2/3 flyer being the answer for control decks. Anyways, that was last episode.
3/2/3 flyer?
Night Vale Spectre.
I didn't say answer. I said it plays well against.
Uh-huh. So
did I say answer?
We got Rurik Thar in the sideboard.
We're gonna be back, Jerry.
Yeah, I don't.
Rurik Thar is awesome.
There's 22 spells in the deck, though. 22 non-creature spells.
Yeah, you resolve a planeswalker. You throw that guy down,
right,
and then
obviously.
You just sit back.
And you just sit back. Yeah.
I mean, with
pretty
else
much,
that
I guess
out
you just
there,
gonna have
like,
to play
dudes.
Anything until. Yeah.
I don't know what you're gonna do.
Yeah, but they have to.
They have to
answer
him, yeah.
Right.
So
they're
going to
take six.
That makes
sense.
Plays well against Esper, that's for sure.
Sure, which Esper Control was the list that got second place and third place at the standard.
Who piloted these lists?
the first one,
these are
William Jensen, and the second one, Camden Adkins.
All right. Well, tell me about Willie's Big Willie's list.
All right. Let me get that one. I have them all.
Willie Jensen, recently inducted into the Pro Tour Hall of Fame. He was out of the 2013 class. Congratulations, Big Willie.
Grats, Big Willie. Winning second place with Esper Control. The creatures it runs in the deck are Aetherling and two Blood Baron of his Kappa.
Main deck Blood Barons.
Yes. They're awesome. I love them.
Two copies of Blood Barons.
Yeah.
One copy of Aetherling?
The third place deck ran one Aetherling and one Blood Baron.
Yeah, so that's why I got third place, because I had one less Blood Baron. This Blood Baron's awesome.
Makes sense.
It also runs five Planeswalkers, one Elspeth, and four Jace Architect of Thought.
No, one Jace.
What were the Blood Barons?
Four Jace, one Elspeth.
They lowered the Elspeth.
Four Jace, one Elspeth.
Took an Elspeth out, put a Blood Baron in.
Yeah. And then for non-creature, non-Planeswalker stuff, we've got Detention Spheres, Azurius Charms, Dissolves, Hero's Downfall, Sphinx's Revelation, Divination, Supreme Verdict, and Thoughtseize. So just basically
the standard
awesome blue, white, black cards.
That guy got second because he played Thoughtseize.
What were we asking?
Did Big Willie not play Thoughtseize?
No, he did. The third place list did not.
Oh, okay, yeah. Why don't you play Thoughtseize?
Well,
you had three on the board.
You don't play Thoughtseize to win third place.
Maybe he was going in like, man, I really want to win third.
Not that I could even get second.
I guess so.
I don't want to win this thing.
Probably one of these. I definitely am not trying to say these guys are bad Magic players by any means, because they're way better than I am. I didn't even know Blood Brigade Elf was banned in Modern.
It's the most recent banning, to be fair.
What were you asking about Blood Brigade?
It was only like
a year ago.
8 months.
I was just asking the quantities. No, it's great. I like it. It plays against the field well.
Yeah, it's one of those things like kill it.
And it's sideboard on this.
Well, sorry. What does mono blue devotion do against it? I mean, what does mono blue in general do against it?
They
bounce it a few times, right?
Yeah. Blood Baron?
What does mono black do against it?
Cry.
Die.
Lose.
In the corner?
Nah.
No, they probably don't lose.
It's a block.
Move the plan B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to win before they win.
Block.
How many mutavolts are in these lists? I want. Quantity of mutavolts.
There's none in this Esper Control list. Let me go back. I'm sorry, I didn't check for old Brad Nelson's.
Brad Nelson had zero.
Yeah, so none in those.
So what was the fourth?
Fourth place was Mono Black Devotion.
Yep.
And he had some
and
mutavolts.
And it's BBD.
And that's BBD's plane? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he went and got fourth at an Invitational the week after
winning
taking down a
GP.
Well, you got to remember that there was also Legacy in there as well. He was playing Stinking Show, though, so...
He's all right. He's taken care of.
Yeah.
Four mean vaults for him. So I guess, you know, double block it.
It's really hard to run mean vault in three colors.
It really is.
Can't really... It's really... Most of your lands are coming to
Well, most of the cards you play nowadays are so mana-extensive. They want the color manas. Like the good ones, at least.
It's not as easy as it used to be when Mutant Vault was around with the vivid lands.
I will say that BBD changed his list from the GP and added the two Temple of Deceit back in with no blue just for the scry ability.
Well, the scry lands have really proven themselves useful.
The scry lands are amazing.
Yeah. It's just good.
Yay, scry lands. More scry lands and Board of the Gods.
Yay. Give me more colors. I'll fight you with my colors. Okay.
Steve, anything you want to say about the Invitational?
No,
any of these players? Any of these lists?
Wizards. The red-black scry land should be Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
Please give us Temple of Doom.
We might
hey, whatever.
Our podcast name.
We'll do a Kickstarter to fund you buying the rights to this if you need to. All right.
We got you, Wizards.
Clarence, anything you want to say about the Invitational before we move on?
No. Yay, Legacy.
While we are on Legacy, though, do we want to jump into that reserve list thing?
No, not quite yet, Jerry. Invitational? Any of these lists? I love the Nihilist.
I love the Nihilist. It's really cool. You know,
it's going to be
hard. I feel like just like a mid-range deck with lots of removal is pretty good. And because right now your aggro that you're seeing is a lot of the early aggro that's coming from like Experiment One Voice, Policeman Mind, things like that. And you just can put those creatures out that are better than those creatures as far as power and toughness goes. And then just sit back, kill their creatures, keep your creatures from trades, and just keep beating them down until you win.
I think Brad Nelson should have ran Gorg Plan Rampager. That guy's so good.
I think he still won.
I do take something away from it. The amount of Esper Control lists has to be going up, which makes Stormbreath Dragon, as it was already a top three creature in the format, by far the best creature in the format, because the, like, monstrosity-ing him.
That's the one.
It's the same thing.
But having the 7/7 flyer was awesome, and you would get one or two damage off the trigger, but with Esper control being a thing, you can actually just win or counter Sphinx's Revelation, not counter, but counteract the life gain of the Sphinx's Revelation.
So you're saying Storbreath Dragon is good against Esper? You think Esper being more dominant is making Storbreath better?
I agree with that.
I can see that.
Not that it's being more dominant, just Esper is showing up more. Because at the beginning of the format, you have all the aggro lists, and Stormbreath Dragon was beatable. It was just another big creature. But now we have control lists popping up, and it becomes the way to counteract the control.
So you're saying the pro wide is so relevant that you think he's the go-to deck against these control lists?
Pro wide isn't even that relevant though, because
What about him? Is it the haste plus pro wide plus the flying plus the monstrous?
It keeps you from getting the tension sphered, which that is random to Esper control list, so it just makes it that much stronger against that.
But he does do everything else that does.
Doesn't get rid of any of the actual random.
I want to say the Blood Baron. I think he's the better than Stormbreath.
I didn't say he was the best creature in the format. I just said for Naya colors.
You're saying he said he was one of the top three.
I do, and I've said
I think that Blood Baron
and Stormbreath are the top three creatures in the format.
Bam. Any disputes? Disputes on that top three list? Aetherling, Stormbreath Dragon, Blood Baron, Vizcapa.
But Stormbreath Dragon does just beat Blood Baron.
Yeah, when those two creatures come head-to-head, they do. But Blood Baron does a really good job at being better against the decks that Stormbreath isn't.
Wow. So we should just... So we need to put together Grixis Splash White.
Well, also...
play all these guys together.
In that matchup with Blood Baron versus Stormbreath Dragon, the Blood Baron deck has the removal to kill the Stormbreath Dragon.
And let's just play five-color control.
Sam, you're right. We've got plenty of dual lands in the format
right now.
It's just perfect. We should definitely go, four or five color deck.
Once you guys make that popular, I'm switching to mono red with Burning Earth.
No, man. I'm just saying play Shimmering Grotto in your three color Grixis deck.
That card's not even legal.
Sure it is. It's in Corset. You can play Shimmering Grotto in Unknown Shores right now.
Unknown Shores.
Come on.
Get in there.
Yeah, man.
For that double red in Stormbreath Dragon's mana cost.
No. You're splashing the white for the Blood Baron.
Oh.
You're playing Grixis, and you're throwing some Tipples of Silence just to make it happen.
That's what I was doing wrong.
And also, maybe you should take out the Ashiok.
To play Grixis properly, you max out on your creatures, and you take out the Planeswalkers. That's Grixis.
Sounds like good magic.
Well, apparently, Naya is a control deck. Anything is possible.
Yeah.
When did Naya be, like, has this ever been a thing? It's like,
We've also got mono blue aggro in the format, which is...
Mono blue aggro has been a thing for a while. I can see...
Merfolk doesn't count.
Merfolk is almost a combo deck.
You put dudes on the board and you turn them sideways. That's not a combo deck.
Right, but it was kind of weird because it was like, they all interact
with elves. You put dudes on the board and turn them sideways, but it's still kind of...
No. You put them on the board, you take them back off the board, and you put them back on the board, and you take them back off the board.
Turn
them
sideways a lot, right? Turn them sideways.
Sometimes you turn them upside down just for fun because there's so much going on. That's how you play elves.
Double deck.
Oh, and then your opponent plays your elf.
Oh, then you're a very sad panda when Volcanic Fallout comes along.
That's your go-to card?
Yeah, Volcanic Fallout's amazing.
You're amazing.
Not played in many modern decks.
I agree. I mean, I know, but it's amazing.
Are we in modern?
Yeah, standard. Bloodbraid Elf. That's all I have to say.
I'm going
to
play that about Legacy. Bloodbraid Elf is amazing in Legacy.
It's really good in Modern, too.
I imagine.
That's why they banned it.
It's not as good as Shardless Agent, I guess. But it doesn't have haste.
Okay.
Oh, well, the next thing I had on the list here, guys. Oh, Jerry Hall. Last week, we took a moment. We talked about what... the decks that Steven, Clarence, and I have all been playing, and then we even gave Josh a call and talked to him about what he's been playing.
Hammer! What? Does he call it Hammer Time? Because he should.
We talked to Josh on the phone, and Josh plays a deck with four Hammers of Peripheros.
And three creatures.
No, there is nine creatures total.
Creatures.
No, there is nine actual copies of creatures in the deck. Not nine different creatures, nine creatures total.
But they're really fast.
Yeah, they are.
They're all hasty.
His deck, the worst part about this, Jerry, is his deck didn't sound bad. Besides the four hammers.
Like, he's got some logic for it.
Well, I mean, the hammer's alternate ability to be able to sack lands just win.
And he's done well. Top 8 more than... probably. Have you top 8 more than Josh, probably?
I don't know. I've done it twice.
Okay,
he's done it twice.
So Josh and Steven have top 8 and
but Steven's done it in the last, you know, 7 years.
I've top 8 100% of the state championships I've attended.
That's pretty good.
100%. All two of them.
All two. Well,
both.
That's cool. That's still cool, though.
That's an incentive to go to the next one.
He is the second best Magic player in the state of Oklahoma.
By every skill that we can look at. Every single one. So,
until that Star City Games state championship comes up. If all that's right. Actually even real. I don't know. I haven't looked it up.
So Jerry,
I may have been lying to me.
We'll get to events. That'll be something for next podcast.
Jerry, let's talk about your junk.
Yeah, let's talk about my junk. For standard, I'm playing junk midrange.
You don't have your list here with you at all.
It's on my phone.
Okay.
I got it. But I also remember. Not really a whole lot going on one drops. I actually don't remember if I put in... I don't think I do. It goes straight into Sylvan Caryatid.
No Thought Seizes?
I don't believe so.
I'm trying to scry that turn one.
I'm going for third place. No Thought Seize.
Deal.
No one drops, but on turn two you get the Caryatid out, and it really helped with the mana since you're playing three colors. And on turn three, you're looking at playing anything in your deck except for Blood Baron. And that consists of Luxon Smiter, Desecration Demon. I've got some Polkronoses in here. Pulokronos.
Pulokronos.
He's really hard to pronounce, but he's really fun to play.
Pulokronos.
Voice of Resurgence is in there, too. If for some reason you don't get the carry, you should at least get that, so you have something to do turn two no matter what. It's pretty fun. Also have Boon Seder in there, because he's proven himself quite worthy. Flash.
Boom.
Yeah, he's good with the voice token.
Boom, Seder.
Just playing as a creature, and he's good with everything else, playing with the bestow. That's a lot of fun.
With the bestow. You know, I haven't seen a lot of bestowing in constructed lists outside of the Boon Seder.
And most of the time, it's not bestowed. It's just
flashed in
as a 4/2.
I saw a Boon Seder bestowed onto a Seder token that came from Zanagos the other day.
So it was like a Seder, hot Seder on Seder action?
It's like, hey bro, I heard you like Seders. So I put a Seder on your Seder that you got from your Seder.
And then we all came.
Thank you, exhibit.
Seder porn.
No. At least Steven knows.
Jerry Hall got it.
Am I right? Okay.
Anyways. I'm not familiar with the hip-hop genre.
That's where meme comes from. You know, whatever. We're moving on.
No, let's talk a little bit more about
it. No, was there any black guys?
Yeah, exhibit. He pimps people's rights.
Oh, whoa. Okay, there's a guy whose name is Exhibit?
Yeah, he's black.
If he were to have a son and he decided to name the son after himself, and it would be Exhibit 2 or Exhibit Junior or Exhibit B, like
Exhibit B, yeah. That's good. I like that one.
Names all of his kids Exhibit A, B, yeah. C, D.
Like, what do you think you look at when you go to their house?
Exhibits.
Pictures of all of their exhibits.
We're all gonna get shot.
That's
Let's
racist.
Remember, Exhibit is black.
Yeah.
Whoa. How is that relevant?
Because no white person would start their name with an X, and that would be Exhibit.
That's how you spell Exhibit.
That's how Exhibit spells Exhibit.
Sam, we know you're not very good at geography, but...
I'm not very good at hip-hop either.
Hip-hop?
Jerry Hall, your joke.
Yeah. So, those are my creatures. Exhibit.
It's black, too.
Removal, I run Abrupt Decay, Hero's Downfall, and I run Selesnya Charms, too. I didn't want to have any removal in my deck that would be necessarily a dead card against any other deck. So I wanted them to hit creatures and, rather than just creatures. Abrupt Decay is really good because it gets rid of all of the early Naya aggro stuff. You know, you're looking at the Voice, the Fleece Mane, all that stuff. It gets rid of all that for you. And it also gets rid of the Detention Sphere, which gives you back your threats that they're trying to get rid of in Esper Control matchups. Selesnya Charm's really good because it can give you a dude for a Voice Token Pump. It can also, you know, get rid of a god, which is awesome.
Selesnya Charm, Exile Target God.
Many cards do that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the cards people play do. The Tension Sphere, Selesnya Charm. I think Selesnya Charm's seen a lot more play because of that.
Yeah, and it also gives me the option to go and try to trample or some damage at the end of the game if I can't quite get...
I've won many a games doing that. Yeah, like, exactly. Since Selesnya Charm has got printed, I've played it pretty much off and on.
No, in every deck.
Pretty much every deck. I'm trying to think about decks.
I found getting the token for either a surprise blocker... Or if they devour flesh, you make you sack a creature. Like,
yeah.
Well, I'll just make a token real quick.
Advent of the Worm is really cool, too. Gives you the 5/5 flash instant speed, basically. 5/5 with flash and trample for 4 seems really good, and that's pretty much what that is. Gives you a token, which... which I don't
tokens
know,
are good.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't have Brave the Elements in my sideboard, but it probably should go there.
Well, look at your creatures.
It's white creatures.
Oh yeah, that's why I don't have it, because I don't have white creatures except for Blood Baron.
God's willing would be cool.
Well, I guess I got a couple. But anyways, and you get that token.
White creatures
are the
best. It
gives you two more dudes at instant speed, which really goes well with Boomsayer.
Yeah.
Because just having flash creatures is just...
How many copies of Whip of Erebos are you running?
Two whips.
Just a quick side note here. This is a complete derailment. Is there any cards that say protect target black creature? Okay, go on. Sideboard? Tell us about your sideboard.
Do you run Reaper?
In the sideboard.
Oh, let's talk about your sideboard.
You're not running the Reaper mainboard?
No. I wanted, Well, it's not like a for sure change. I like Reaper, but I wanted to try Politanos, because it's also a 4-drop and it's bigger. That's what I tried. But Reaper was not... What are we laughing at? I hate you guys so much.
Your sideboard, Jerry Hall. Not laughing at your sideboard.
I haven't even said anything on my sideboard. I know you're not laughing at that.
Sometimes Sam and I look at each other and it's funny.
Really, really funny.
Really funny.
So for right now, until I made my mind up about the Reapers being in the main deck, that's where they sit, is in the sideboard. And I got two in there. And they're really good. 4/5 lets you scry whenever things die.
Basically what you're looking at with Reaper of the Wilds is he plays well against those decks that are maxing out on the spot removal. So you taking out your Desecration Demons and everything else. So you jam him in instead of all these other creatures that are a little more susceptible to removal. Because Reaper can just get completely...
Because his hexproof is...
Well, I mean, if you're looking at a list that's not playing Supreme Verdict, Reaper of the Wilds will always live because he has the 5-ass and hexproof.
The only thing it really... If they can get your board to nothing and they devour fleshy.
Yeah.
But even then, you still have a couple of options with Celestia, Charm, Advent, and Boomsayer. You can still manage to keep your beat alive.
And as everyone's dying, you're scrying to look for these things.
Yep, pretty much.
It's a great card. It's very well rounded. He just doesn't have the beef to make the main deck. Because when you're looking at the 4-drops, Desecration Demon is still a little better.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I've seen that he is blown up on Modo. Did you guys see the price tag on Modo? I remember, Clarence, what did you pick up Desecration Demons online for?
I bought 4 Desecration Demons for 1.3 tickets apiece.
Now you can pick them up for about 9 tickets each.
Well, cool. I read the other day that it was the most expensive rare from the turn of rack to come out.
Yes, rare card. Not mythic, because... Well, you're still paying almost 40 ticks for your Sphinx Revelations. I don't know what...
27 for Sphinx Revelations.
Is it 27? I don't know what Jace is at. I can't imagine him being more than like 15, 16, though.
If you want to know those actual prices, go to one of those MTG Finance podcasts. That's not us.
Yeah, not at all. There's so many people in finance these days. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Weird. I was looking on Twitter today.
How do you make money when, like, half the... Oh, my God.
When everyone is making money?
20,000 of you.
I don't get it.
Not that many, but...
Is there just that, like, such a critical amount of just random dirtle MTG players buying up so many Magic cards based on just weird speculative advice from random strangers that are in mass?
Gotta follow the market, man.
No, I find it easy. I follow Magic close enough that I could follow the market if I wanted to. It's just I don't see it paying off.
Well, you can make money doing it, but...
Yeah, we knew somebody that did that, and they spent a lot of time doing it and didn't get a whole lot back for it.
You miss as much as you hit. Kyle McDaniel has...
Yeah, that's the guy.
Had 42 copies of Living End, and then it became a deck. And he got to sell them... He bought them all for 50 cents, and he got to sell them all for, like, $4. So he made $3.50... for times 42.
Math. $50.
All right, so...
Okay, the other...
So the junk deck... Okay, go on.
Yeah, yes. The other creature that I've got on my sideboard is the Mistcutter Hydra. It's just flashy. Oh, not flashy, hasty.
He speaks for himself.
Yeah, he's a green fireball.
Yeah, pretty good. Glare of Heresy is also in there, just to switch up removal if I need to get rid of things like Elspeth. You know, I take out...
He does get rid of Heliod really well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, he gets rid of that white god.
God, he's everywhere.
Oh, white god.
I think that's maybe the reason they made Heliod. No, never mind.
They knew all the other gods were going to be good, so they said...
They didn't want to make the white god the best.
So. No, I was just going to make some other backhanded racist comment. Go on, though.
Stop it.
We don't really have Krovac's racist hero.
Best name for a Magic card ever.
All your white stuff gets +1, all the stuff that's not white, suck it.
It actually says that on the card. Well, Steven's copy anyways, because I wrote it there.
Yeah. I got 2 more Celestia Charms on the board too, to switch in just in case. This was after Mono Blue won, so it's kind of where my head was, because we didn't have enough.
So you haven't updated in about a week?
Yeah. It hasn't been updated, but I have Golgari Charm in there too to protect against, like, board clears, and also to get rid of, like, Elspeth tokens, Master Wraith tokens, things like that. Little one guys.
I think Golgari Chamber is very underrated in the format right now.
Because it also destroys it at Chabot.
Yeah, it gets rid of Detention Spheres.
Gets rid of Whips.
Whips. Gets rid of some of the Legions, all sorts of cool things.
Yeah. Etherworld Dreams. Etherworld Connections.
Right. The only other thing I have in there is Skylasher. And that was in there just because Mono Blue was really cool. I lost to that deck. I was trying to find a way to win the deck. But that's,
and now we can take that out and put good cards there.
Exactly. Now we can take that out and put good cards
there. Mono Blue is still going to be out there.
Right, but I don't need Skylasher in there.
Skylasher is not the answer.
Okay.
Oh, I think I said that immediately. I'm like, I keep talking about it. Skylasher always comes up.
Trying to push me away from that. And I was just like,
well, when brewing, it always comes up.
I just said you got to play with it, so...
It just doesn't do
enough.
It doesn't do what you need it to do for that deck because you're trying to.
If Miscutter Hydra wasn't there, I would see Skylasher, maybe see it some sideboard play just to fight the Blue Menace.
The Blue Menace is unblockable. It doesn't matter if you have Blue.
It's only a blockable late game when they have all their manas up. It's not
or on turn four.
It might be turn four.
I don't think they mind tapping out.
So Jerry Hall, looking at the these last couple weeks of tournaments, since you've really, really looked at your deck, any changes you would want to make right now?
Yeah, I really don't know. Holocronos, it's good, and it kills little dudes, but I kind of want Reaper back in the main board. I hadn't got the test with Holocronos very much, but I really like Reaper. Is the first guy I kind of wanted in there, so I kind of want to put him back in. He just he beats out Luxodon Smiter. Anything with like a 4 power,
I think
kills.
I think Polychronos is good in your deck. I think that Reaper is good in your deck. If I were making the changes, I would probably try to cut a Smiter or maybe one Boomstator. I don't know how many you said you have.
3.
But that, just to fit, you're only trying to squish 2 in, right? 2 Reapers?
Yeah.
I think I'd leave the Polychronos at a... Do you have it at 2?
Yeah.
And then have 2 Reapers in one of those other spots is what I would...
That's a lot of 4 drops.
Yeah, it's a lot of 4 drops, but...
4 is not like a horrible place, but that's just really emphasizing the mid-range.
But that's what you're trying to... Yeah, right. That's what you're trying to get to, though. You're not... He's by no means an aggro deck. Like, he's just trying to get to 4, and then he's going to lay threat after threat each turn until you...
Don't have a way to get rid of it.
And then he's going to work on that. Later, he can pump that into Polychronos. He gives Reaper Hexproof.
Okay, I think when playing this deck, let's say you hit the 4 manas. You do it on turn 3 because you got the Keratin. In your hand... You now have the option to play Holocronos, Reaper, or Desecration Demon. Which one do you slam first?
Totally depends on
board. Yeah, depends on what I'm playing against.
Their board's empty. They're holding manas up. Assume they have removal.
Is it blue mana?
It's every color mana.
It depends. I mean, you have Chromatic Lantern now. Remember, is there's another 4 drop in my deck and it's Whip.
Okay. Out of these three, these are 3 creatures that are all kind of serving the same purpose.
You obviously play Desecration Demon first.
Yeah, that's what I do.
I think Desecration Demon.
First. If they can kill it, they can kill it. If they can't, they're taking a lot of damage. If I can get the whip out.
You're getting the most value out of it.
And if it goes to the graveyard, it's the card that I want to whip the most. Because it doesn't... That's right. No, it's good to whip. I know they can shut it down before it gets to the pack, but you're killing the creature that way either way. And if they can't shut it down, it's 12 points of life that it's putting between you and your opponent.
Indeed.
It doesn't really do a whole lot other than beat things down anyways. So if you get to beat things down with it a little bit more, that's what you want.
Okay, you make that decision. You play Desecration Demon. You get to tap with your Desecration Demon.
Okay.
You draw Whip. So now what do you do? Now what do you do, Jerry Hall?
You've got a Desecration Demon in play, a Polychronos in play, or a Polychronos in your hand.
Irrelevant. Irrelevant.
A Reaper in your hand, and a Whip in your hand. Do you play the Whip, or do you play another threat, is what Sam's I don't know what Sam's doing, but...
Probably want to get the Whip out. I've already got a threat, probably better than anything they've got on the field. Until they get rid of that, I don't need to be moving my...
I think that's right. Forward. I think that's right.
If they can deal with the threat, they deal with it. And if they can't, then I keep feeding them down with it. And then by the time they deal with that one, I've got a few more in my hand.
What I was trying to emphasize is with this deck, like, because he does have the utility of the Whip, and so many just valued creatures between the Spiders, the Voice Resurgence, and these 4 drops that we were talking about, getting the Whip out, playing just one threat at a time, saying, deal with this.
Yeah.
Say, deal with this. There's no reason to play another threat. Unless they play just like a stupid blocker or something.
And then
there's no reason to play another threat.
Kind of, you know, say that it is like a deck that does happen to have enough creatures that they can throw a Desecration Demon
until they can find a way to deal with it. You've got like the flash option, which is really cool. So if, you know, if desecration ever does get through, you can try to bestow it. And if they still can just keep getting around your desecration demon, you can flash one in at instant speed on the end of their turn.
It's just great. So like you do the turn 4 desecration demon, and if you turn 3 and then you get a turn 4, you have 5 manas up. If you're holding that boon center, you can potentially swing in for 10. That is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty.
So an answer board state.
Yeah, that's on turn 4, you know.
Solid. And so you're the highest cost card in your deck is the Blood Baron, so mid-range to a T.
So seeing these decks with Supreme Verdict, Anger of the Gods, Mizzy Mortars,
I think his deck naturally plays well against all those cards already.
The Mizzy Mortars, I mean, that's kind of hard with the Overload, but I mean, it still doesn't kill... Doesn't kill Polychronos, doesn't kill Desecration Demon.
You still get a token from your Voice Resurgence.
You still get the token, and if you've got anything bestowed with the Boon Satyr, then, you know, you get the Boon Satyr if they manage to kill whatever that's bestowed.
Or you just flash something else in at the end of the turn that they start.
Yeah, and I just...
with the Advents, yeah.
Yeah, Advent's in there too.
Lovely. Well, that's
junk. Like a good list.
It seems like a good list. This is like the list that went before the Pro Tour that I was really thinking was going to be one of the top lists. I was looking at the junk colors, and I think I was probably not the only one, I imagined.
Well, I mean, it does the same thing, really, that the Naya Control deck was kind of doing, but the Naya Control deck, it doesn't run as nearly as many creatures. But it's like they lay down their big dudes and then... They kill all your dudes, and then if you can't kill their dudes, they win.
And you could totally, if you wanted to, just put like a whole bunch more control elements into the board. Yeah. You could throw in some Doomblades, some Devour Flesh, some more Heroes Downfall, some Vraska in the board.
Lot of really powerful removal, which
how
is
many,
why.
How many copies of Heroes Downfall did you play?
4. Okay. I didn't list that off. I do run 4 in the main board. And that's just to kill anything that gets. It's good.
It's just one of the better cards in the format.
I do want to say that I tweeted at Tyler Lytle to see what he was playing
at the Pro Tour
Theros, and he said junk, and then parentheses, he told me a very appropriate name for the deck. So he didn't do very well, so he...
Who knows what his list looked like, though?
Yeah, and I'm not saying it was anything like it.
It's probably at least half the same.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it's not the right colors, but I do think that mid-range is probably the right... deck.
I'm still hung up on this Naya deck.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Now, how do we fit Stormbreath Dragon into your deck?
Well,
we the cut the green. Out.
No. Don't cut the green.
I don't think you cut the black.
Stormbreath Dragon and Aurelia.
Yeah, you cut the black. That's what you did, and you won. You cut the black. Naya Control, GG.
Okay, so now we have this Naya Control deck in our standard format.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is going to be a deck that people are going to be sleeving up. We're going to be seeing it on Modo. We probably already are seeing it on Modo and so forth. We have a new deck to list in the standard format. A new enemy, if you will, if you're not going to just conform and play Naya and some variety, Steven, I guess. What do you think, Steven? Are you thinking of upgrading the old Naya deck? Trying out a control package now that there's a Naya control package?
It is pretty tempting, but
Steven has a lot of fun playing the deck that he's playing now.
I have a lot of fun playing it, and I just got those voices.
Foil voices are sexy.
I just got those.
You could play the same list, just put the voices in instead of smiters. Just do it. Do what Nike. Do what Nike tells you to do.
We're stuck in with Elspeth and Zendikos. Doesn't seem too bad.
It doesn't.
Voice isn't a bad card. Jamming it into this deck is not going to hurt it that bad.
I'll look and see where I can fit it in, and I will let you guys know next week for sure.
Okay. Zero Gore Clan Rampagers.
That I...
I know.
There's 7 creatures in the deck.
Why can't it have 4 of them be Gore Clan Rampager?
I already am.
His name's not Josh. I love you, Josh.
Josh is totally going to be one of our few listeners, for sure.
I'm already mid-range. I mean, it's not that much of a step to jump on up to control, right?
No, sir.
You weren't here for that.
I saw it on TCG Player. It is Naya mid-range.
That's what they listed his deck as.
Oh, well.
I had a turn 4 kill in the semifinals, and I'm mid-range.
Steven does not play mid-range. That was my disclaimer voice.
Steven plays the extremes.
Okay, so considering the top decks of the format, we have... We're going to go in for this week at least, put the Naya deck as one of the top decks of the format. We still got the Mono Black Menace that's out there. That's still going to be quite prevalent because people have invested all the money into all the cards already, so they're definitely going to be sticking with it.
All the money into their Grey Merchants.
Hey. You're the one struggling to get the Hero's Downfalls now.
I will say that the tournament, 4th and 5th place were Mono Black Devotion.
Yeah, so that's still a thing. That's definitely still a thing. Mono Blue is going to be a popular, and it's probably going to be a popular choice that people are still going with because it's still won the Pro Tour. It's still going to be out there. It's probably not going to be near the numbers as it was last week. Esper Control is still the control deck of the format. We haven't seen another control deck come at least to the top. There's plenty of control decks out there.
Naya Control seems pretty in the format.
I've already listed that. I'm just saying the go-to control deck of the format is the Esper. I'm still going to maintain that statement regardless of your feelings of this.
How's Grixis Control coming along?
I took that out of sleeves.
Grixis Control is no longer a deck. All right. So these, I would say these are our top four decks. Is there any disputes? These are the decks you want to be looking at in your gauntlet of your for testing. The decks you want to be able to have game against.
I still think Green Red Monsters is really, really good.
Okay, I agree. It's a great deck, but I'm saying these are probably the top decks of format. Top four decks of the format going into this next week.
Yes.
Okay.
I concur. Right. I agree with Sam on something. That doesn't happen often.
It doesn't. What? Anything stand out to you guys on how to battle these four particular decks? Pithing Needle, I think, is still one of your best cards. That's what I'm throwing in.
I maintain that it should be a main deck card in this format right now because it's good against every single deck.
So Pithing Needle, make sure you got your Pithing Needles. Jerry Hall, any card, anything? The battle, these menaces. I think Blood Baron is still a great choice.
Blood Baron's still good. We're just talking any color.
Yeah, just cards in particular to look at.
Retention Sphere is always going to be a really good way to deal with a lot of things, especially Pack Rat. You can end up not having to deal with that as much, even though Grey Merchant's still going to bite your head off. But that hurts their devotion, too.
Speaking of Grey Merchant, I had a thought earlier.
A dangerous pastime.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you, Clarence.
With Grey Merchant costing 5 manas and being like a pretty big threat of the mono blacklist, what about the card Slaughter Games?
And what's really funny is I've mentioned that for the Esper control list because they only had 2 threats last week. Now they have 3. But if you Slaughter Games Blood Baron now and have Pithing Needles for Aetherlian Elspeth, you still are on a pretty good track to beat that deck. I really think that Slaughter Games has always been underrated because it can't be countered and it takes your best card away. I don't know. Slaughter Games is good.
Slaughter Games is a great card. There's just not really a good shell for it right now, I think, is the biggest barrier.
I think the shell for it is the
Grixis Control.
John Finkel. Black Red, Desecration Demon, Stormbreath Dragon,
Rakdos Return
deck.
Yeah.
That seems good.
That's a deck we need to sleeve up.
You ran 4 copies of Rakdos Return.
Why would you run 3?
You never used to run more than 1.
I know.
Now it's viable.
Well, I think in the control deck, 1 or 2 is fine, but if you're running just like a tempo mid-range deck, then 4 is probably the right number.
Being able to kill Planeswalkers with it makes it viable.
Good. It makes it very good. Oh, and the discarding their hand.
Yeah, that helps.
That's a good approach.
Seems pretty
sure, I'll put my Smiters into play.
I appreciate it.
There are a lot of Smiters out there. That's something you need to be aware of before sleeving up Rakdos Return.
If you're playing Rakdos Return in a deck, you're playing 4 Heroes Down.
Yeah, you're going to kill a Smiter.
4 and Dreadboar.
Decks that run Smiter.
I'm just saying it's something you need to be aware of. I'm not saying it's not a reason not to do it.
I've already got 4 creatures out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anger of the Gods, too.
You don't play Rakdos Return against you, probably, Steven. You probably take out 1 or 2 of them.
I played against those kind of decks.
I probably would too. Yeah. I just didn't want to be so bold.
Take it out, but if I was going to play it in game 1, it would be just a kill.
Yeah, it would just be a fireball, pretty much, if played against you game 1.
Oh, so Black Red has some pretty undervalued cards right now.
I mean, you also get that Thoughtseize and Hero's Downfall, which are 2 cornerstones of the whole standard metagame.
And I almost think Devour Fleshes as well. Seems
no, it's a good card. It's a removal card.
It was really good when Hexproof was really good.
Well, Hexproof is always going to be really good. It's just not as prevalent right now. They've nerfed our Hexproof creatures.
It's not as good.
That's another thing.
What if I whined about Invisible Stalker?
I'll still whine about Invisible Stalker. That guy's a bitch.
I'm not saying he's not. Just play Terminus.
After you've taken like almost your whole life total to the equipped Invisible Stalker, you want
turn two. They play Invisible Stalker. Your turn two. You top deck Terminus.
That's true.
I'll start doing
you
that.
Move along.
We need to top deck better, indeed.
Yeah.
Next episode, we'll talk about how to top deck better. Stephen Graves, you're writing the show notes for that one.
Got it.
How to?
Yeah, I don't have to do anything this week.
Show notes wise, like what we're talking about, not the show notes that actually go up on the show. Those we need. I need to stop referring to those as one and the same.
It's part of the card, Sam.
Hell yeah. Hey, Reed Duke's in third.
So Reed Duke has made a jump on the list. Let's move on to the top 25 list. Big movers this week, Clarence.
The top mover, again, for the second week in a row, was Sam Black.
He went up from 10th place
to
13th. No, he went up
to 10th.
I thought that's what he did last week, was 13th
at
the 10th.
He was almost the bottom up to the 13th.
Okay, he went from like 20.
Head, right?
Yeah, he was like 20 plus, and he went up to 13th, and always went from 13th to 10th. Okay.
Yes. And Reed Duke took third from Shahar Shanhar, and Willie Edel moved down one. There's not really. Martin Juza moved up two.
He had a pretty good showing at Antwerp.
To
he didn't 14th, top eight, I guess.
And David Sharfman. Sharfman moved up to.
I bet he's never heard that.
To 18, tied with Raphael Levy. The only person to drop from the rankings, Sam, was.
Zuchinko, a small Asian fellow.
Zuchinko.
It's a very bold statement.
No, it's a very accurate statement. I've never heard of this guy.
They grow them on purpose just so they can have them.
Yeah, in labs, and they don't play magic.
Maybe they grow them to play magic.
We need really bigger tall magic players.
You gotta be really tall so you can see their hands.
I don't know, I would be kind of scared if massive Asian person sat down across from me.
Eight foot seven Asian guy
sits down across from me. Like, his knees are pushing up against my knees. I'm scooting back,
that's
having to play magic from across the room.
I don't think I would be intimidated.
He's still Asian.
I would be intimidated by that. Okay,
just because your dick's bigger doesn't mean it's any, like,
the
worse
entire
than
match, I'm thinking, why is there a massive Asian dude here? He doesn't need to be that big.
There's a lot of massive dudes at Magic tournaments. This once, we saw a massive dude sitting in a recliner at a Magic tournament, and then 20 guys sitting around him on the floor, like Jabba the Hutt style, sitting around this guy. Like, just all looking up at him,
and it was cold in the room.
I guess so.
Did he have, like, a neck beard and everything?
He had a neck beard, like,
smell bad.
I couldn't get close enough, but Josh and I did walk by about 12 times trying to get a good picture of it, because it was a very humorous scene. We never got a successful picture, though.
Oh.
That's the top 25 list.
Bad guys in recliners.
We love Asians.
Magic tournaments.
Eight.
Oh, next up on our list, guys. There's something I had here. I wanted to talk a little bit more about Modern.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to get in that at all? We don't have to.
Yeah, let's do it. What do you want to talk about?
Oh.
Devoted Fish?
Oh, there was... Raphael Levy did place 25th at GT Antwerp with Modern Fish. I did not look at the list, but I did see him tweet about that. Wouldn't doubt if there was a Thassa and a Biden in that list. Thassa and or Biden and or what?
Levy. He picks the same decks I would play.
Levy has always been traditionally one of my... Traditionally. He's
poor
always...
Guy?
Consistently been one of my favorite Magic players. He said, poor guy. Yeah, I don't think Levy would play Scapeshift, dude. Sorry. Not seeing
or at least he would add up his dad right first.
If he did, he'd probably play Prismatic Omen.
Clarence isn't very good at geography.
So with Modern Season right around the corner, Grinders are going... we have Modern Masters in the scene now, so we do have a lot of reduced prices on a lot of Modern staples. With a lot of discussions today with the reserve list... discussions and whatnot that we saw on Twitter, people were discussing heavily the prices on the price influence that Modern Masters had on the actual format. They had, people always fixate on the top cards of the format being Bob and Thoughtseize and Tarmogoyf, these real money cards, and how they didn't really get changed with the printing of Modern Masters. Because they are the cornerstones of the whole format.
And all that stuff you just said, pause. Raphael Levy was 8-1, and this is his list. 2 Coral Helm Commanders, 3 Curse Catchers, 2 Kira Great Glass Spinner, 4 Lord of Atlantis, 4 Master of Pearl, Trident, 4 Master of Waves, 4 Silver Gill Adept, and 2 Thassa's. 4 Aether Vial, 2 Spell Pierce, 4 Spreading Seas, and 3 Vapor Snags.
3 Vapor Snags at Spell Pierce. Those are, that's, wow.
Man, that seems awesome.
Wow. Dude's a hoss.
No, he's a fish.
No. He said, I don't care if you have creatures on the board. I'm just going to sweep through with my unblockable fish. Really feel like you want Biden in that, but Kara's really good.
Kara's what makes the deck really good.
Well, she's played in Legacy Fish. She's available for Modern Fish, might as well. She's the only non-fish played, right?
Thassa.
Well, Thassa's a god.
Gods are not fish.
Yeah. She is a god. She is the god of the fish. She is a fish and a people and an enchantment and an artifact and a planeswalker.
For those of you that haven't played much Modern, shut up. Kara's a 3 for a 2/2 flying legendary spirit.
From what set? This is relevant.
Modern Masters.
Oh, no.
Betrayers, I believe.
Betrayers of Kamigawa. One of the only playable cards that come from the set. That's why I wanted to mention it.
Horrible set. And she says, creatures you control have, whenever this creature becomes a target of a spell or ability for the first time this turn, counter that spell or ability.
That's amazing. It says, use 2 removal spells on all of my creatures. Any of my creatures. Including yourself. And if you counter one of them with your spell pierce or a vapor stag or something, I realize the vapor stag doesn't counter, but I'm sure everyone knows what I mean. If you do that, they have to do 3 spells. It's so weird it doesn't play reband, but I see it, though.
I mean, spell pierce isn't...
Spell pierce is to keep the nonsense at bay. They like, make sure you don't just lose to a turn 2 storm nut draw. That's what spell pierce is there for.
Yeah, and for Aether Vials, because...
I love that Aether Vial is finally... I want to say finally seeing play in Modern. I'm sure I got play in Modern before. I never really saw it, but that's awesome. That's a great card. Was Aether Vial printed in Modern Masters?
Yes,
I have no idea. Okay, so the price is also dropping on that. So Modern is a lot more accessible of a format now, thanks to Modern Masters. Which was going back to what I'm saying. Besides the actual cornerstones of the format, that those prices didn't really drop much. You're still having to pay like $50 to $60 for Bob or $100 for your Goyf because they're great cards.
Or $400 for your foil Goyfs now.
Yeah, something like that. Because they're great cards. They like the quantity of them. Sure, it is. They're the more of them out there. But now there's just more people have been introduced into this format, and they want to get in, and they want these cards. Therefore, the prices maintain the same. But now we don't have to pay $15 for spell pierces and for remands and whatnot because there's a lot more of them in the field.
I still believe you have to pay that much for the original.
They didn't reprint remand?
Okay, whatever. There's a lot of Modern staples out there that they help the price exponentially.
Blood Red Elf is banned.
You can't play it in Modern Jerry Hall. No Cascade!
Man.
No Cascade, unless you want a Living End.
That's why I don't play Modern. There's no Blood Red Elf.
So Modern season is right around the corner. We're going to be playing Modern, and I think we've talked about this. I think we've talked about what...
John.
Yeah, what we want to play, and so forth.
I'll play Fish, too.
I think you should sleep with Fish.
Fish is...
Because if you don't play it, I might be interested. It is a mono-blue deck, and I've always been a fan of the mono-blue archetype, regardless of what...
What it's doing.
What it's
as
doing.
As long as they're blue cards, you're down.
Whoa, blue cards altogether? 60 of them? Let's do it. Sounds like fun. Oh. So, moving right along. That was Modern for you, I guess.
We're not moving anywhere. What's next?
I was going to, since I've already set it up a little bit, move right on to the reserve list that has been a hot topic lately. We haven't really ever talked about it because it doesn't, I don't really care about it. So it's never been something we've discussed in our group or whatever, but a lot of Magic players do. And I'm actually just curious to hear your guys' opinion on it. My opinion is I don't give a shit. They could reprint the cards if they want. Hell, I might get a hold of some of them and play some of them then. You know, I might actually play vintage instead of just not playing. I turn it all the way down.
Well, for me, I would like to see the cards reprinted because I, you know, don't own any of them. But I do understand the people that have them that have paid, you know, however much for their Black Lotus or whatever to play in vintage. I understand them being upset that would be reprinted to be pulled out of a $6 pack.
Yeah. Any pack that has the ability to have Black Lotus in it is going to be $6.
That's what MSRP was for Modern Masters.
Vintage Masters?
Vintage
Masters. It was $6 MSRP. Maybe it was $8 or something like that. I know they didn't sell for that, but whatever. But what?
Yeah. They were $6.99 for the MSRP on the Modern Masters, and that's what they're going to be for the Vintage Masters on the online printing and the booster packs. Although, since the online printing of the Vintage Masters, it will be a regulated price. It'll always go for $6.99. You'll always be able to buy a booster pack for $6.99. There won't be the brick-and-mortar stores to jack up the prices of the Vintage Masters. Well, what this introduction has raised the hot topic of the reserve list and everything, and people saying Modern Masters was so successful, it just made the format more accessible to more people. So why not open up the reserve list, print these cards, bring more people into the game, make more magic and money all around to everybody? Why not make it accessible?
And that's what they're wanting to do. The people that actually have the cards. Way less people actually have the cards than the people that want the cards.
Promised the people that had the cards originally, like, they will maintain the value because we won't reprint them. Okay. Now, here we are, 20 years later. Not 20 years later, like 15 years later.
Since Legacy. That was the last card. Destiny was the last time cards were put on the reserve list.
Markadian's Mask was the first set to not include. So yeah, right. That's right. Okay. So by printing a reserve list or like a Vintage Masters in paper, if you will, I think that would be like the way they do it through booster packs, so that brick and mortar stores could sell the booster packs and therefore get the cards and have the secondary market for them, and why WotC can still make hella money selling, you know, printing the cards and selling the booster packs. The original cards would still maintain their value because they are still the original frame, the original cards. Just like the original Goyf didn't ever dip in price. Never affected. The original remands are still the same price if they were in fact reprinted. The original printing of the cards will still maintain their value, so people are saying there's no reason you're not protecting anybody.
Well, one thing I think about is the people that do own them, they say, hey, Wizards doesn't care about our format. Well, you're not getting new people into the format.
No, it's essentially a dead format in the States. When the States started having proxied Vintage Tournament, people stopped seeking out Vintage cards and stopped... People are saying proxies killed the Vintage scene in America outside of Eternal Weekend, which is happening this next weekend, by the way, that no one really cares or even follows Vintage besides the core set of players that have been playing it for
forever.
Since forever. It is like a 1% of the Magic population that it is appealing to it stands right now, and it's not getting any bigger.
I just looked over the reserve list, and I think it's kind of BS anyways, because any list with 35 cards from Homelands... It's kind of a joke.
There's probably only 35 cards on the list that are relevant anyways. I can't imagine. I imagine that only a small fraction of that list are actual money cards. Like, they just put all the rares, pretty much. Like, most of the rares, I think. We've had this discussion before. We deducted that there was X amount that were excluded.
Nox Diamond.
Anyways.
I don't know.
The reason we had the reserve list is because of when they first did Chronicles, they mass-produced all of these cards that were worth money at the time that people wanted their hands on and they didn't have the chance to because of the low print runs. And people were up in arms saying, and it almost killed Magic. It almost killed Magic. Mara has talked about this many a times, and how without them making this promise to its players at the time, without standing behind this promise, that it probably would have killed the game.
All right, but times changed.
Times have, in fact, changed. Fact, we have a corporation that has made a promise. Fact, corporations don't keep promises, but if they break this promise to us, why would, like... As a player base, why would we ever seek out and buy their product if they were to just say, never mind, I know we just reinforced it 2 years ago, we even closed up a loophole that we pointed out. We're just going to go ahead and just say, you know, never mind all that, years of debate, whatever. If a company is able to do that, why would anybody sensibly invest in this game long term?
We're addicted.
We are addicted.
We enjoy playing the game.
Indeed.
Because it's not about money.
It's about playing. And
you want to be able to play.
I'm just trying to present to you guys both sides of the argument as I understand it.
I fully understand that, but I don't see myself quitting.
Yeah, and it's like a...
Try not to think of it as yourself, though. Think about it as a whole.
Who's going
to
quit? Those 15 Vintage players that still play Vintage?
That's what I'm saying. You've got the people that invest in the cards. Those people will be upset. And then you've got people that invest through the game, and they learn the game. They get good at the game. They enjoy playing the game. Those people are going to be happy because there's going to be more people to play with. So you're losing the people that, you know what I mean?
I have a Black Lotus. I don't care. Print them or
I think print. it. If anything, Modern Masters has proved to us that Wizards does have the capability of restraints. They'll only print X amounts to not flood the market with cards. They have the knowledge. They've now done a whole release and learned. They've probably made a few mistakes with it that we're not even aware of. And they've learned. So I think we should trust them as a company if this is a move that they choose to make. I think as a player base.
We should trust them if they're lying to us?
If they choose to go, say, never mind, we're just going to back out.
By the way, we're going to do this now.
I think Magic knows what's best for Magic, though.
And you got to think, like...
I wonder if any of the same guys are still that made that decision are still there.
Sammy Two got a lot.
Just from what I've heard on Marvel, on Marvel's Tumblr, though, and I haven't been on there very much lately. From what he said, there's about no way that the reserve list...
No, they're not even talking about it or thinking about it. This is just players talking. There's no way we're going to influence the decision whatsoever. WotC, they don't even...
They made a promise.
When it comes up...
They're not going to back out of their promise.
Yeah, when it comes up, they're just like, yeah, that's not happening. Move on. Next topic. Yeah, they're not... It's not going to... I don't see it happening, at least anytime soon.
If they made paper card vintage Masters, how much would they sell for?
The price of $6.99, of course.
What are the odds of the power? Is power just in Mythic slots? Are they doing a premium slot power like they are the Vintage Masters in Magic Online?
Just Mythic. Why would they make a...
Well, you know how they're doing the power on Magic Online. It's not just filling a Mythic slot.
They made a whole new...
No. You know, remember with Modern Masters, you got a premium card with every pack, a foil card. And then the odds of getting a premium Mythic card in that pack, those are the odds of you getting a piece of power in the packs, of getting the premium Mythic card in a Modern Masters pack.
Right. So if you open power in a Vintage Masters pack, it's going to be foil?
I don't know that. I know that's the slot it fills.
Okay. And
I think that's okay.
But we saw Modern Masters sell for $15 a pack.
That's what it goes for at brick and mortars. Around here, you could probably find them as cheap as 10 at other places, I imagine. But that price isn't going down. The price is only going to go up because they're done printing them.
I think they were selling for 12 sticks.
There you go.
And so the key cards you can get in there $100-$150.
Unless you pull a foil Guif.
Regular cards, not
yes.
Foil. So then you print Vintage Masters, and the key cards you can get in there are
$400 to $1,000.
Right. $100, you know, like
that's huge. That is exponentially huge.
So this is why they're not going to do it, though.
Difference.
What are we looking at, 20 a pack?
Okay, but we're looking at the original copies of the cards are these prices, these high, ridiculous prices. If they were to reprint, hypothetically, do better Vintage Masters in paper, and we were to see these cards, new artwork, new card frames, I think it would be just silly to assume they would have the same price tag. Let's say Tabernacle of Pendril Vell. It's about a $400 land card right now. That would be an obvious inclusion in a Vintage Masters set. How much do you think a Tabernacle of Pendril Vell would go for in a reprint? Bear in mind, it's only played in Vintage and only in some decks.
It's played in lands.
Sure, there you go. $70, $80?
Yeah, I don't see it being $400.
Yeah,
maybe
I could see
price.
It between $100 and $200.
Maybe half the price?
Because you're still looking...
I mean,
you're looking at a mythic card.
Not heavily blue, not as heavily card as Bob. Bob's $50-$60.
I don't know anything about Legacy or Vintage, so I'd be terrible guessing.
Because of the damn reserve list.
Yeah.
You don't know this because
I didn't even know the reserve list was even a thing until we were talking about the reserve list before we turned this microphone.
There you go.
You just knew they were expensive.
I couldn't afford it. That's why I don't play Vintage.
So this is all speculation. What's the cheapest Mox? It's the red one, right? The ruby, or is it the pearl? I don't know. What's an unlimited Mox pearl go for right now? Somebody hit me with a number.
Mox pearl unlimited.
Average price
$552.
$552. That's not much more than the $400 Tabernacle. So let's say it's put Mox is about the same prices as Goyfs, about probably like $130 to $140.
No.
If they were to see a reprint.
No, I still believe that Moxes will be.
You think people will just
scoop
them up?
I think power will still be power. You'll still be paying at least $300.
Even if you... Okay, they do this, they print this, and outside of like the limited scene, do you think we see more Vintage and Legacy tournaments start popping up? Do you think that becomes more of a thing?
I think more people play those formats.
Obviously, more people start playing those formats because the cards are available.
I don't know if they make more I think they would actually have Vintage tournaments.
Vintage would be a viable archetype for a GP.
Right.
The takeaway from this is if they did it, it'd be awesome, but it's magical Christmas land.
Dick move.
Magical An Christmas
awesome
land.
Dick move.
The reason I asked about the price of the packs is how much were you going to pay for a pack of Legends at the GP?
I was considering paying $80 for a pack of Legends.
$80 for a pack of Legends.
I was considering it.
We counted the number of cards in Legends that are worth more than $80.
And this is why I didn't do it, by the way.
And there were...
Math said no.
There were maybe 20 cards that are worth more than $80 in Legends. So, if we have packs where there are cards worth...
Side note here, Legends was a huge set.
Right.
Legends was like a 350 cards. It's one of the biggest Magic sets ever, bear in mind.
And their packs,
so the odds of getting one of these 20 cards are a lot less, and there was 11 cards in the pack?
Yep, and their packs sell for $80. So that's why I was wondering, you know, if they made a Vintage Masters.
There was not a rare in every pack?
No, there was a rare in every pack of Legends, yeah.
That's when they started that. $45 on a pack of Arabian Nights and got a Dragon Engine.
Hey, that's a pimp-ass Dragon Engine, too. We still have that shit.
I think that's Antiquities.
That's definitely Antiquities.
That's what I meant. But it just, I don't know. The price of Vintage packs, Vintage Masters packs, I think would have to be...
We're not the group to work out the economy for this.
It would be ridiculous.
Well, if they printed those packs, you know, you wouldn't be paying $80 for a Legends pack anymore because of that. Because there's only 20 cards that you would really be seeking after, and those cards are going to be reprinted in the Vintage packs. So
because
it's kind of nice.
So the people out there sitting on these boxes of Legends and or Arabian Nights and whatnot, because there are people out there sitting on these boxes. I hear about it all the time. Okay, I do because I seek out weird forums. But
they're going to be. I think they're going to be.
Those prices, I don't think would be affected much. It's still that original product.
Right.
It's still not replicated. Those Legends packs will still be those Legends packs.
Yeah. It all comes back down to if you're collecting the cards or if you're trying to get them to play in the tournament.
Exactly.
There will
no one's going
for both.
Yeah.
For both. There will be collectors that want the original cards.
If anything, I see it going up because more people will seek out the older versions of the cards. They'll be like, you know, I could buy this Vintage Masters right with like some of the same cards right here.
I don't see them going up. I see them staying the same. I don't think that because, well, maybe, because you're bringing new players in that want to have the...
New
the,
money.
The best version of their card.
New money.
But does the best version of their card become the foil from Vintage Masters, or
I think when
the original card?
I think seeing people play Bay of the Lands now like is a testament to the older versions are almost always more pimp. It is a matter of perspective, person to person.
I saw a sealed box of beta starter decks.
Sick.
Online. Just guess the price tag on it.
eBay?
It was just posted on Instagram. They had a price on it.
Beta booster boxes. Unopened.
Starter
deck. Yeah.
I'd pay...
$25,000. I know that's way too high.
I'd pay about $5,000.
$60,000? Whoa. I know I saw a box of unopened Arabian Nights go for $900,000 once. But that was in an auction, though.
That's the kind of stuff the punter for the Minnesota Vikings plays Magic. He buys that stuff.
You saying Chris Cluey likes booster starter boxes of
I'm
beta?
I'm just saying. He has $60,000.
He might not like them, but he doesn't care about $60,000 either.
I didn't think Chris Cluey was actually the punter for the Minnesota Vikings anymore.
The punter for free agent in the NFL that used to punt for the Vikings.
He played for the NFL. He's worth fucking rich. Doesn't matter how long he played or for who he played for, he's fucking rich. They are NFL.
I didn't know this was a rule.
So yeah, it is absolutely it's a rule. But like
isn't
minimum
the
contract.
Minimum is
$700,000. Yeah, it's insane. That's if you just suck really bad compared to everybody else around you. You get $700,000 to sit on a bench and suck.
Alright.
It's always, you know, banding.
It's funny, Clarence and I were talking about this, the whole Soulbond banding and the parallels between the two. But really, I think what we need to do is come up with a whole new mechanic that not only fixes banding, but doesn't have the restrictions of Soulbond. But what I lack is a good name for this mechanic. I think all the good names have been taken.
Soul banding.
That's what I was thinking. No, Jerry, it's not something you can wear.
Why not?
Jerry Soul bands with Jay. Oh, guys, come on. Aw.
Well... I have maybe something we could talk about.
So
every standard tournament that I've looked at, that I've seen a new deck every time. Do you think that we're done seeing new decks, or do you think that there's still a few out there that haven't quite seen a lot of day? And if you do think there's more, what do you think could be up there?
Rixis Control.
Control.
Anything can happen after
Naya. We're in a world where Naya control and a GP.
This format is
or an invitational,
it's
rather.
Awesome. It's great.
Next week, it's Boros control.
It's doable. It's so doable. Brain. Four of Angel of Serenity, go. What ever happened to that bitch? No one plays with her anymore.
She's good.
She was so good before. Now it's like...
slow. Boom.
Eh.
It made the tempo go a lot quicker.
But no, the format has slowed down. She should be better. She doesn't...
I don't think that the format has really slowed down.
At States, Steven?
I don't understand.
I
think this format is about a turn slower than the last standard format.
What was moving faster last format?
The last format? I don't know. I don't have anything to back this up. This is the first time I've had this thought.
Don't say it.
Exactly.
But I honestly believe that we're a whole turn slower, the standard format. There's not as many mana dorks, so like the potential.
What was cool when the mirrored siege block was around, you know? Like the tempered steel deck was really quick, but I mean...
The tempered steel and then like metal crash shenanigans.
That was like two seasons, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was quick.
Okay, okay. We're not Zendikar crew.
Yeah, we're faster than vampires and werewolves. And we don't sparkle anymore, which is pretty cool.
Yes. Oh, gotta love the top-down design.
Yeah, it's really convenient that happened with the Twilight series coming out.
You know, as bad of a card as it is, Titan of Eternal Fire has really cool flavor. Like, he gives humans fire.
Oh, what is this card?
Says for 5/6 giant. He's a Titan.
Oh, yeah, all humans.
All humans have tap him. Tap him to do one damage to target creature or player.
See, and the card.
Pingy human giant.
Good.
There's this other called
Perforce. Yeah, I mean it's still not good, but it's just cool.
Yeah, I guess we do owe all of our technology to fire in the beginning.
Boros so, control, yeah,
really deep there.
Perforce and Elspeth.
Boros control is doable. The tools are there.
Anger, Mizzen, Mortars,
Assemble.
Right. Unless you're Perforce, Elspeth,
Assemble.
Also, Mizzen, Mortars.
Gotta have Boros Reckoners.
Kills Blood Baron. It's kind of something.
I mean, you got your spot removal with like Lightning Strike, Magma Jet, War Leader Seelix, and the Mizzen, Mortars.
Definitely
needs to be there, yeah. You've got Anger, clearing the board. You've got Chain to Rocks, keeping bigger things
you
can't bring away.
That, what's that? One drop that you can overload for two, deals one damage to each of their creatures?
Electricity.
Yeah.
I think you said it right.
I did.
I said it wrong.
You did.
I say a lot of things wrong.
That's true.
Say Star Trek.
Go fuck yourself. Did I say it right? See, I fuck it up every time. Okay. So next time, I think we're doing the Star Trek episode next, right?
Star Trek?
I
swear you said Star Trek.
I go out of my way to not say it right. Well, guys... we're done here. We're at about an hour 40 minutes recording time. We're probably going to be cutting at least 20 minutes out here.
Let's cut out all the dumb shit we say.
Then they'll have 2 minutes.
Well, I think an hour and a half, hour and a half is good. That's about what people are looking for. So for their entertainment. So I like it. We'll just keep trying.
Charm of a ring.